Welcome to Dave and Dom Demystify, a FinTech Futures podcast, helping make sense of the world of FinTech and digital finance. Please sit back and listen as the two Ds take a subject and discuss it to make it clearer and easier to understand.
Demystify.
Welcome, everybody, to the Dave and Dom Demystify show. And this week, we have another opportunity to demystify Starling's engine and also to demystify GFT's role in that. So welcome to my two guests, Carlton and Sam. Would you like to give us a quick introduction to yourselves, starting with Carlton?
Yeah, well, thank you very much. My name's Carlton Hopper. So I'm the UK Managing Director of GFT. Quite a few people don't know who GFT is. I'll give you the 22nd version. I mean, we're 12,000 engineers predominantly working in financial services across 21 countries. And we're either working with platform providers to integrate and build new best of breed platforms, or we're building them for our clients. I'm a veteran sort of IT and banking chap, been around for 35 years before I joined GFT in a number of banks, small and large, and also quite a few consultancies and IT companies. That's myself.
Brilliant. And over to you, Sam.
Yep. Hi, I'm Sam Everington. I'm the CEO of Engine now from Starling Bank, but I've been with Starling for 8 years now, since it was a 20-something person startup. So I have a tech background, spent most of my career replacing leasing and loan platforms in banks and equipment manufacturers, and joined originally to run the engineering teams, building the apps and the APIs. My kind of Starling claim to fame is being the person who pushed the button to launch Starling in the App Store on the day it went live with everyone standing around my laptop. And since then, I've moved all over the organization, responsible for product and design, a while in operations. And then when we started to split the technology company from the UK regulated bank a couple of years ago now, I stepped across to lead that area of the business.
Wow. So you've kind of seen the initiation of the bank and the actual platform itself. I mean, you look far too young to be a veteran of a startup. What's the relationship between GFT and Starling? Like, why do we have you both here?
Well, let me start, Sam, maybe. I mean, just to be clear, we are not a platform company. You know, we're a services company. So in the simplest form, we're working with Sam and the team at Engine to provide the integration services to help implement Engine in clients. So effectively helping them do the plumbing, if you will, in the simplest terms. But Sam, maybe you can elaborate as well.
Yeah, our answer is the opposite. We are a platform company and not a services company. So Starling is the UK licensed bank and has built out the technology platform that it uses to offer these kind of rich, personalizable, digitally native products to customers. And so it has the tech platform you need to run one of arguably the world's market leading banks, right at the top of customer satisfaction tables in the UK, and one of the few profitable digital only banks that exists at all. But it's also got the operating experience running a bank. So we have the knowledge and we have the systems, and the idea behind Engine is partnering with banks in other markets that have got the license, the brand recognition, the operations teams, the things that take a long time to scale, having watched us do it once, and put the two together, and you can get to a number of very compelling digitally native businesses much, much faster. But having the right technology and having the knowledge is not the same, as I think you're well aware, as putting systems into banks and successfully transforming them. And for that, you need people on the ground that understand the local market and the regulations and the systems there, and particularly can build the plumbing, because technology systems do not live in isolation in this world. And integrating Engine and all the services there with the data providers that exist in the local market, the data warehousing or reg reporting that exist within that bank is no small undertaking. And that's where we look to specialist partners like GFT to pick up that significant amount of work that's necessary to get engineering.
Yeah, and I would maybe add to that, which is, I mean, most of our work in the marketplace, as I say, is with financial services organizations. We do work a little bit in manufacturing, a little bit in retail, but we're predominantly in financial services. And we've been pretty extensively involved in replatforming for many of our clients. And we're seeing a big acceleration of that demand in the marketplace. for those of us who have been around a while, you know, the phrase kicking the can down the road is very, very sort of front of mind in terms of some of these things. But there's certainly a real, I think, a growing need, which is driven by consumers. And our observation, delighted that we, you know, we connected with each other just over 18 months ago, was we saw a gap in the market for our clients as well. As a services company, that was saying, hey, look, we want to re-platform, but for whatever reason, and there are a number, we don't necessarily want to own all the IP. We just want to work on some of the differentiating channel activities, and we'd love to have it as a service solution. And there is a real segment of the marketplace where the notion of engaging in a complex, ground-up core banking replacement program is not something that they're, you know, interested in doing, but also the end operating model is not necessarily aligned with their strategy. So we were delighted to have an opportunity to, you know, just join Engine very early doors to address that market need and really bought into the core premise here that there's a real gap in the marketplace for a different way, if you will, from doing complete ground up core banking replacement.
Because of GFT's footprint, it sounds like you're a very global organization. Does that sort of indicate what, from a kind of Starling Engine point of view, you're kind of looking to do? Are you kind of focusing on any particular markets, or are you just going out there and kind of trying to sell where you can from a kind of geographic point of view, knowing that GFT could support and I guess other partners could support should you get the sort of sales opportunities?
Yeah, the partners clearly give us a geographic presence and spread that we couldn't achieve and scale ourselves. So Starling is remarkably well known all over the world. There's a bit of a fintech tour that goes on, and we get banks turning up from all corners of the world here in London, kind of wanting to know what Starling's done differently, how it's made a digital bank just break even but properly profitable. And quite a few of those conversations end in, can we work together? Can we partner together? And I'm in a position that we can be quite careful which projects we undertake. We want a real track record of proven delivery and getting these things in. And so some markets are better aligned, some markets are probably a better fit for a kind of digital nature proposition like Starling, but it's increasingly broad. There's a lot of interest. Europe, obviously, the Middle East, Southeast Asia, we spent a good amount of time in. The question everyone always asks me about is the US and whether we'd go after the US banking market at some point. And in my previous role, actually, we took a British software product into the US. So you can do it, but it's like dealing with 50 different countries. It's probably not the place to start out. They have a very different regulatory approach to most of the Western world. It's kind of rules-based rather than principle-based. So clearly, and a global technology platform is of interest to us and where we want to be, but I've got the backing of a very big and profitable organization, so we can focus on being successful rather than running before we can walk, which is a unique privilege compared to most startups.
I'm also interested, like, the partnership, it's hard to get some of this stuff right sometimes because, you know, when I look at it from the integrator perspective, they've got to invest in learning the platform, you know, as well as you guys could implement it yourself. They then got to run a bench that says, well, look, we've got these trained people and then we've got to implement, keep them busy, right? But on your side, on the bank side of things or the software company side of things, you've also got to kind of invest your time in bringing them up to speed, but then, you know, almost let go of the wheel to say, well, actually, we trust these guys to do the implementation, right? And if anything goes wrong, it's kind of like, you know, it's down to the integrity of the partnership to make sure that there's no finger pointing, et cetera. And I've seen it go wrong so many times. What is it your guys are doing to kind of make sure those things don't happen and that the partnership just kind of grows and grows?
Yeah, it's closer work than that. Yes, we both have to invest in this, but we can see the potential impact we can have together. That's an investment that's well worth making. But it's not the case that like GFT are there on their own doing this. We have a small team on site to kind of give that ongoing support and training there, but we're not doing most of the implementation work directly. It's just about connecting people and getting them to work closely together and giving easy answers to the questions. So we have Slack channels where the engine and the GFT teams are together and they can get that quick feedback, quick support when they need it. And we are still involved in the program, albeit in a in a smaller role so that we know it's going in the right direction and it's going to go live. You've got to have a common purpose.
I mean, I'm sort of been around a bit and been in partnerships as a both as a client and on the services side. And I think the things that really make a partnership work is to that first point that Sam raises, which is, do you fundamentally have a shared vision about the market opportunity? You know, and it's got to be quite guttural. You know, there's a commercial angle here for both Engine and our clients and for GFT, but there's got to be a real belief of, you know, does this fix a problem in a very neat and elegant way, and is there a market need? Without that, it doesn't work. It might work for the first one, but it won't work in the longevity. So I think we have that, because I mentioned, you know, we saw a gap in the market. The second thing is relationship and culture. We're quite an engineering organization. I think Engine's a very engineering organization. And that's sort of the mix of the sort of what the business role is in banking and what the technology role has been blurring for years, but it's now got to a level of blur that the two are completely interchangeable, I think, for the more forward-thinking organization. So I think having a deep-rooted cultural view about the art of the possible in terms of engineering is really key, and we're a very engineering organization. And then a lot of it really comes down to trust and relationships, like anything else. I mean, it's you know, yes, there's an organizational handshake, but there's also a very strong, you know, personal relationship. And there's nothing better than actually doing work to try and build that. And, you know, we were very fortunate that we got involved in, you know, one of the very first organizations that's going ahead with Engine. And then when you start getting teams working together day to day and working with the client, you very quickly start to find out how to make it work. And so far we've been working, I think, really, really well. But if you've not got that guttural belief in the business opportunity that you're both going to solve for your clients, and there isn't some basic cultural alignment, I think partnerships are always very difficult to make work. And so far so good. I think we've ticked quite a few of those boxes, if not all of them.
Yeah, we've both seen this go wrong, and it's when you're driven by the short-term commercial return of one project that makes you go into the behaviours you described rather than thinking about the long-term potential.
For us, you know, us in GFT, a lot of what we're doing is re-platforming clients, right? We're not a small organisation. We're not a huge organisation. We're in that sort of middle ground. But a lot of the core things that we're doing is helping clients re-platform. So as I say, we understand the plumbing. So of how you would, you know, wire a core system into a local, local environment, if you will. So we need to know what's going on a little bit behind the door of Engine, but Engine is solving that because it comes pre-configured, pre-packaged. But we understand it. We don't need to necessarily understand the product. We're not here to understand everything that's in the product, but we do know what it does and how you integrate it. So I think there's a very, you know, good fit from that perspective.
I mean, it's really interesting in terms of, I guess, that whole partnership side of things, because, you know, as you say, you have to kind of trust the technology. I mean, I'm kind of interested in, like, the process that was gone on either side to kind of arrive at, actually, this is a partnership that would really work for us. What were sort of some of the things that kind of indicated that? Because, you know, as you say, this is it's a sort of really fundamental part, I guess, for you as GFT. You can't afford to get this wrong. And on your side, Sam, like, you know, you need the right partners to be kind of, what was that process? Was it just kind of finding an opportunity and kind of working on that opportunity and kind of creating the language? Or did you sort of spend a lot more time doing diligence, Carlton?
Well, there's always going to be a leap of faith. And until you do something, you don't really know. I've got to say, from my perspective, it might have been a bit easier. It's rather nice to be able to say, well, the technology company, you know, that we're working with, albeit obviously shifting to become a technology company, has built a highly successful bank. You know, highly successful. So, you know, frankly, there are nuances that I'm sure Sam could talk about around how you transition to become a technology company. But it's certainly a lot easier when, you know, I go walking into my board and say, hey, you know, I've got this idea of working with this company called Engine. Who are they? Well, you know, they launched Starling Bank, you know, the award-winning, profitable, successful X million customers. So from my perspective, you know, and that's a big opportunity, obviously, and a big sales point for Engine overall. So for me, it might have been a little bit easier. But you've got to bite the bullet and just start working together. But that's from my perspective.
Yeah, No, I think it's very similar. You said in the original bit, part of it is a leap of faith. You make a judgment call of, well, can you work with this person and with this team, and do they have the right experience, and is it mutually beneficial? And so we spent some time together, had a number of meetings, met each other's teams, and ultimately you make a judgment after that.
Yeah, but I remember, you know, without sort of going through a retro, I mean, there was a point where you kind of go, let's just do this. And I run the UK business. I can make that decision. I'm syndicated a little bit with some of my global colleagues, but there's a point at which you've done some due diligence, and then you believe in the logic, you believe in the people, and you look across the table and you kind of go, right, let's get on with this and do this. And whatever that commitment is, whether it's starting a piece of work or whether you're investing in a bit of discovery work, etc., much leadership at the end of the day, you've got to bite the bullet and decide to do that. And I think, you know, in this marketplace, I think some organizations and some client organizations, by the way, can spend a long time, in some situations, years, you know, doing it. At some stage, you've got to, good leadership is making an adjustment call and getting on with it, and making sure that where things aren't quite what you thought, that you fix them and you're agile to do so. I don't think there's any way of getting away from that, frankly.
I mean, once you become hugely, hugely successful, Sam, and you've got, you know, customers in, prospects in, you know, lots and lots of countries, do you see yourself potentially needing more partners? And how will that work, you know, for you? I mean, I'm just saying, because, you know, from my past experience, having worked in one of the big incumbent kind of core vendors, they had a number of partnerships, and every partner was super important. But then every partner also worked with quite a few different software, you know, core banking vendors. And obviously we were the most important, you know, for them. So at some point this kind of gets into a, like, how do you scale this and keep the same level of commitment, integrity going?
Yeah, I mean, your background, you know the world that we're all working in. It's around the opportunity and the impact you're going to have ultimately, and we're a results-driven organization. So as long as GFT work with people, we work with people, that is what we're going to do. But as long as we're delivering a number of successful opportunities together, that's a very, very valuable partnership.
I was trying to help you out here, which is, I fully expect you to work with other organizations. And our job is to make sure that there's more situations where it makes sense to the client and to Engine to work with us, but it's not going to be a panacea across the piece. And by the way, I also work with a lot of other IT companies and services companies, you know, in my clients. You know, it's very rare, particularly in the tier one banks, right? If we just talk about the tier one banks that are, many of them are, have been grappling with the whole notion of core platform modernization. I see an acceleration and really trying to bite the bullet to do that right now. Something I've not seen for the last 10, 15 years. They're really needing to do that. If you have a project like that, no one consultancy, no one technology company is going to do all the work. You know, in a way, it's a bit easier for me, because it's a lot easier for me as a mid-tier specialist to work with other advisory companies that might be looking at operating model, strategy, and business case, or even some of the big technology companies that are doing things like migration because they've got an incumbency within the client organization than it is perhaps for some of the very big IT companies. But my job is to do a good job for the clients, persuade Sam and the team that they can work with us a bit more than they work with others.
Yeah, great response.
Yeah, as Carlton said, sometimes it will be led by the client and their long-term relationships. Sometimes it's led by the geographic or the particular kind of expertise or experience led needed.
So I was kind of interested in that, the point you make about, you know, this is the first time in 10, 15 years, you're sort of seeing companies looking to re-platform. You talk about the market opportunity. I mean, I guess we can all see what's kind of going on, but I was kind of interested from both of your perspectives as to why now, you know, why are banks now having to really think this stuff through? Why are they thinking about doing things in a different way? And, you know, is that uniform around the world, or are there particular hotspots, you know, I guess outside of the US that you can kind of point to where things are really starting to happen?
I think the level of pressure depends on market dynamics and competition to an extent. Everyone has been looking at it, but they've been looking at it for years and quite often just kicking the can down the road. But competitive pressures and investors are forcing a more serious conversation in quite a few markets now, where there is a successful fintech, a bit like Starling, doing something. And you can see it in the market results of the UK banks. They're all under pressure on their cost to income ratios. They're much higher than a bank like Starling. And a big part of that is the technology choices and the investment or non-investment they've made over an extended period. You can't get to Starling's level of return on equity and cost to income ratios without doing something radical. And now that it's been proven that the not only the market will bear it, but actually customers are happier with it, I think you've got to take it seriously as an executive team and work out when you're going to bite the bullet and commission that replacement.
For me, I mean, I think it's four C's. The first thing is consumers. I think consumer demand for products and services and ways to interact and experiences is only accelerating. I mean, and obviously COVID was a massive step change in that, really, but it's not really stopped. So I think the consumer demand to react and be agile in terms of your product offers, but also the way you interact is just getting very, very exponential. I think the second one is, by and large, people are getting comfy with cloud, you know, and new technologies. By and large, I mean, we could argue about countries' maturities and different flavors, and we'd probably need more than an hour to talk about that. But by and large, there's a little bit more comfort in terms of, you know, as a service and cloud technology. So therefore, thinking about what you're going to do with it. And then the third thing, I think, which for me is accelerating the consumer demand for my statement around 10, 15 years is, it's an upward spiral, isn't it? Which is competition. If you're a bank and you see another bank launching and being able to provide offers and services, the competitive pressure for you to react, I think, is becoming a little bit more aggressive than it was. So I think a combination of those three, I'm seeing a real interest in it. And even in the last 2 years, if I'm honest, you know, if I go back 2 years, there were people who were really making the commitment and decision to re-platform, which is, well, I worked for a bank when we re-platformed. You know, I worked for a bank for 5 years, one of the big four, and non-trivial exercise. You know, people can make or lose their entire professional reputations on the success or failure of things of that sort of magnitude. So, you know, certainly even a couple of years ago, there were those that had a very strong view that they needed to bite the bullet. No, those that were like, there's no urgent need. I'm certainly seeing a lot of organizations that have perhaps been thinking about doing this later, accelerating their exploration to do discovery work or bite the bullet. And then, of course, the more that people move around, I mean, it's a small industry. You know, people from technology companies end up working in big line roles in banks. People from banks go and join organizations and build platforms. It sort of reinforces. So I think it's a very, very hot marketplace. What I would say, though, is there's perhaps a fourth C, if without being too smart about it, which is culture, which is probably a bit of a pro and con, right? Because yes, we're very engineering competent, but the vast majority of the challenges when you're implementing this become really about the culture, because it changes the way the organization works. So there's definitely sort of, I think, some drivers that is the reason why it accelerates. And that certainly has been my observation in the marketplace. In terms of marketplaces, quite global, actually. I mean, there's different nuances. You know, it's right. Quite global. You know, a lot in the Far East, a lot in the Middle East, as you say, a lot across Europe, a lot in South America. So, you know, there's different nuances there, but that would be my perspective.
Yeah, I think the customer is the most important one. The pace of change in that has surprised everyone. I remember when Starling was building out his business banking offering 5-6 years ago, very few people believed businesses would embrace digital banking at all. And there was a real insistence that, for instance, Starling was mobile only and that we had to have a web offering if any businesses were going to take it up. It's totally shifted. We've gone from up to 9% market share in 5 years in the UK in small business banking. And I think it's sub 5% of small businesses ever access the web portal. They're almost entirely mobile only. And nobody in the industry believed you could sign up small business accounts digitally, let alone get them to bank that way. So people's expectations have changed much faster than bank systems have been able to.
I think you're totally right. I mean, I've worked with the big banks over the course of my career. I've always found it incredible that people can use a mobile phone and then when they come to work, sort of not think that people would use them for things they do in life, basically. But I mean, I was reflecting, like, Nubank have just come out with their numbers in Brazil, and I mean, it's staggering in terms of the increase in customers, and that's a change which has happened in sort of a decade, basically. So, yeah. You know, it's incredible how rapidly all of this can... And I guess that goes back to having sort of modern technology in the banking space, which is able to adapt very, very rapidly, because I guess none of us quite know what's around the corner, you know, in terms of what's kind of coming down that line. But, you know, my background is experience and the design side of things. So it's really great to have, you know, see these platforms with lots of flexibility and with, you know, I guess Starlin was really built with the customer at the center of it in a very real way. It's fantastic to kind of see all of this.
It surprises banks when I had the real joy of meeting a lot of different people over the last couple of years, and the banks are still focused on selling product. They're amazed that Starlin doesn't kind of monetize its data, try and push product, cross sells, nothing like that. The whole app is just around solving customer problems and letting them do what they want to do. And it offers a range of products, but you have to go and find them yourself. The app is not even going to tell you they exist. But actually just building a slick UX that makes the day-to-day things easy. People are, oh, I wonder if I can get this product here as well. So they just want the seamless, simple experience.
And you raise a really good point. There's a lot of very, very vibrant economies out there, right? You know, in South America, Eastern Europe, etc., where there's a very skilled, modern workforce who, you know, demand these sorts of services. So the, you know, the commercial opportunities for banks in some of those regions to be able to offer the same sort of experience, if you like, as Starling has done in the UK, is, you know, very, very, very attractive and real. So I think that's, for me, you asked the question around, in some instances, around global. I mean, most of my team in GFT who are working with Starling don't work in the UK, because we're talking about the markets that we are working in, as opposed to the work we're doing in the UK. Of course, it makes sense that we have a relationship with Starling, because literally, you know, we're Brits and our offices are down the road of each other, but the actual work is, you know, in other locations, because a lot of their target clients that we're looking at are in some of those locations. And it's just luckily that we have sufficient critical mass in some of those interesting geographies. If we didn't, I don't think we could support Engine in the way that we need to in the future.
Really for Sam, and I'm just intrigued, right? Obviously, Starling's been a massive success, right? At what point in the journey, was it from the beginning, or what point in the journey did you decide that we've got to do Engine? Like, when did that come into execution?
We've always seen the bank as like a tech-enabled kind of tech platform business. So we actually launched the APIs before we even launched the app. They've always covered a full scope of services rather than the kind of open banking side. And it was probably only 6 months after we launched that we realized we had the only kind of real-time API-based access to UK faster payments, for instance. And so we ended up commercializing that through the payment services and then banking services. So we've been selling the technology platform since the beginning. The plan to grow internationally is something we've been working on for the last few years. And it's a product of looking at the business and working out where its uniqueness is, where its strength is. And it's not just the technology, but the knowledge operating a bank. I think it's been the biggest surprise for me working through the Engine business, that actually it's not the app, the customer experience that we thought would sell the platform to people. They get most excited when they see a thing we call Management Portal, which is the single pane of glass that we use to handle everything from chats and calls to payment operations, financial crime, card disputes and things. Everyone is in the same single consistent web interface with a proper single view of the customer. And that just blows anyone who's worked in a bank back office away. They've never seen anything like it. And so having that capability, but also having processes that were built to be digitally native, not taking something the bank's been done for 20 years, and I was a consultant before this, and digitalizing it, that incremental improvement, but a real step change rethink of what would we do if the customer's only on the phone and interaction is only digital. And Starling's got that knowledge in spades. We've been running a 3.5 million customer bank now for a while. And so you put the two together, that's the thing that we have that's unique. And that led to, okay, actually let's separate the technology business and seriously pursue that as Engine and these partnerships that banks are very interested in when they come to see us.
Fantastic. Well, really appreciate you both coming onto the show. And yeah, thank you so much for your time and sharing your experiences. It's fantastic. Well done.
Thank you for tuning in to Dave and Dom Demystify. We hope you enjoyed the show. Don't forget to like and subscribe and tune in next time as we take another topic and demystify it.